Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover.
Across our university city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
He remains one of the iconic names of Cambridge. Roger Sid Barrett, founding member of Pink Floyd. Pushed out of the band by his fellow members, Barrett eventually dropped out of the music industry completely, living as a recluse for some 30 years, while Pink Floyd went on to become one of the biggest selling bands of all time. Sid is the subject of a documentary film, Have You Got It Yet? The Story of Sid Barrett. You can see it at the Picture House tomorrow night, along with a Q&A with the director Roddy Bagawa and producer Orion Williams. I'm pleased to say Roddy is on the line now. Morning to you.
Good morning, Julian. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Apart from a bit of a sore throat. Long story. and thank you very much for joining us. I wonder if we'll start, before we actually speak to you in detail, we've got a little clip from the film, and this is Sid's one-time fiancé, Gayla. Let's have a listen.
Dougie had called me and said, you know, this is getting crazy. He's I don't know what he was doing, but he'd been in his room for days and nights and hadn't come out. I contacted Sid and I said, why didn't you come to Cambridge? And somehow or other, it was just like we were back together again. So I moved in.
What, into Hills Road?
Into Hills Road.
Into the cellar?
Into the cellar with Sid. And it was all dark, and it was originally a coal cellar. And it had all his bits and pieces from his childhood there, his drawings, his paintings, and his guitar. And it was all very normal. Mrs. Barrett would come rushing out and say, oh, hello, dear, what about a cup of tea? Rog, would you like a cup of tea?
Roddy, I think just listening back to that clip again there, it kind of encapsulates a lot of what we know about the surface of Sid Barrett.
Yes, I couldn't quite hear the clip.
Okay, but... it was Gayla, his fiancée, yes. talking about, I guess, the engagement and going to live with Sid, and I guess his mother as well in Hills Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the story of Sid is quite interesting, you know, how he traveled back and forth between London and Cambridge all his life. So he was, you know, there was definitely this element of home, Cambridge being home, you know, and those kinds of memories of that. So I think part of the story of maybe his split existence as Roger and then Sid as the rock star, you know, is bound up in that story. So he did go back and forth between London and Cambridge quite a lot and then finally returned home.
The split personality thing is interesting. There's a longer version of that clip, and obviously people can see that if they visit the Picture House tomorrow night. But there's a longer version where, effectively, Roger breaks off the engagement, and then Sid says, no, it's all on, and then buys Gayla a second engagement ring.
Yes, and the story that Gayla told is that he signed the letters differently as well. So the first time when he broke off the engagement, the letter was signed Roger. And the second one where he said, never mind the first letter, he signed it Love, Sid. So, you know, there was definitely this element of, you know, maybe the memory of the past and you know, his life as a rock musician.
It seems strange, you know, looking back. I think I just, it was about 20 years ago, not quite, since Sid passed away. And I think it's round about the time that I came to Cambridge, and I was aware, obviously, of him. And I guess, you know, I'm in my mid-50s. I kind of discovered almost Pink Floyd backwards, if you like, because I was familiar with the more, sort of, I guess, 70s and 80s pieces. I then went back and discovered how they first came onto the scene. But they let Sid go, effectively, didn't they, after just a few short years?
Yes, I mean, you know, Pink Floyd's got a very long history with Cambridge, obviously, because Roger Waters and David Gilmour, and also the co-director of my film, Storm Thorgerson, they all grew up together with Sid in Cambridge. So, you know, Pink Floyd's history is completely intertwined with the town, and I had done a film on Storm. This is how I came to the film on Sid Barrett, and in which we went back to Cambridge several times, and we went to Grandchester Meadows and the Corn Exchange and all these different sites and their homes. So, you know, it's absolutely intertwined with that. But I was very similar. I mean, the first concert that I went to was Pink Floyd on the Animals tour, which dates me, Julian.
I've already outed myself this morning as when I was at school, so I'm completely done.
Yes, but I was young then. But you know, I saw Pink Floyd on the Animals tour. You know, that was the first show, and I love that record. But it was the same. I mean, I didn't really discover the first Pink Floyd records. I think I was in a band. I was in bands when I was younger, and the bass player of one of my bands loved Piper at the Gates of Dawn, and so, you know, he would play it incessantly, and we would try and learn Sid's songs, but they were so peculiar. So, you know, my first memories of those records were not being able to play them.
As you went around Cambridge, and obviously not everybody in the film you interviewed is from Cambridge, but were people happy to talk about Sid and look back on his life?
Well, we didn't really talk to people, you know, that, you know, say strangers or people just going around. We did go to the pub, The Rock, and, you know, talk to a couple people. But, you know, it still seems like there is this protective layer around Sid. You know, I think that was one of the stories around them, you know, that, you know, was he a recluse or did he just want his privacy? But it seems like also Cambridge was very protective of him as well in some ways.
Do you think, you know, looking back at, you know, what may or may not have caused Sid to take the direction that he did? Was it, you know, a mental illness he would have had anyway? Was it LSD? Was it something else again? But do you think he would be treated differently in today's world with those issues?
Well, yes, I think absolutely that, you know, there's several things. I mean, certainly there were not different types of diagnoses that exist now, you know, around autism or things like that that existed back then. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, that moment of the 60s was just so explosive and creative around, you know, music and art and, you know, everything that was happening. I mean, it just must have been a kind of whirlpool of things. And then the other thing I always think about is how young they all were. I mean, this is something that people tend to sort of forget about, which is that, you know, they were in their late teens, early 20s. So, you know, if you're in a band that all of a sudden is having success and all these things going around, you know, maybe you're not, you know, you don't have the awareness that you would have, you know, or sensitivity to that now. And then the other thing is, I always, when I look back, when I was researching the film, at how many gigs the Pink Floyd were playing then. I mean, it's astronomical. You know, they're sometimes playing two shows a day, 6 days a week. So it must be incredibly strenuous, you know, just in terms of performing. And then also, you know, absolutely Sid was, you know, for sure the center of a lot of it. So I don't know if it was pressure, but certainly it was a lot of activity around him.
It's interesting, isn't it? We have a show here on a Sunday morning, the 60s scene, and when we promote that, we sort of list some of the bands who played Cambridge in the 1960s, and it was phenomenal. You know, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and more than once. And then today's artists, well, we're told that they only make the money from the performances, but those performances are way bigger, almost the kind of stadium things which Pink Floyd were doing.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that's the livelihood of musicians now, right? Is the live show. You know, I think that's why some bands are starting to put out vinyl again, which I'm still a big vinyl collector. But yes, you're absolutely right. You know, you don't make much money from playing the smaller venues anymore. Although, you know, many bands love to do that. You know, Blur did some smaller show tours before they did Wembley. But you know, they absolutely, yeah, they've gone to these big one-off concerts or these big huge festivals now, because you know the amount of money that is thrown at them is just, it's incomparable. I think
the film was said is being shown at the Arts Picture House tomorrow evening, and there's a Q&A with yourself there as well. When you take a look at the film, did it sort of end up being the film that you expected to make, the story you expected to tell, or did it divert from that in any way?
Oh, very, very good question. I mean, I think the film took over 10 years. I want to say it was 11 years to make. And it absolutely, you know, changed over that time. I mean, one thing I joke about is Storm Thorgerson, you know, who was initially the producer on the film and then started doing some of the interviews in London in the UK. He died in 2013, and so I joke that Storm got me to work for him for free for 10 years after that. But, you know, I often think, you know, how long should it take to make a movie about someone's life? You know, specifically someone that, you know, was a very complicated person. You know, should you spend 3 months and make a biography of somebody? So, you know, it took 10 years, but in that time span, you know, it absolutely changed in the editing. At one point, we had about a 3.5-hour edit of the film. But probably the most rewarding thing was that over that time span, people had heard snippets about the film, and, you know, I got in contact with them. And so things came to the movie over that long stretch. You know, Gayla's engagement rings, for instance, you know, she wrote us and said, oh, I still have the engagement rings, the two engagement rings that Sid gave me. So she sent them to us and we were able to shoot that. And probably the other big thing was Phil Taylor, his photographs of Sid in Abbey Road Studios, you know, that Phil Taylor is David Gilmour's guitar technician, very sweet, sweet guy. And I had read a little thing that said that he had had a camera there. And so I emailed him and I called him and I emailed him and I emailed him, and he was very kind of elusive, and then finally said, yes, it's true, Roddy, I do have some photos. I had a camera. And so then I called him again and emailed him again and called him again. And he, you know, at a certain point said, okay, this is the film that I should, you know, show them. And so we've got some photos of Sid when he showed up at Abbey Road, you know, which is a very mythological story that have never been seen before, you know, that Phil had since that time period. He's thinking about doing a book of that tour. And so those came very late to the film during the whole process. So all these personal kind of, you know, artifacts and memories, and, you know, Nick Mason opened up his photo archive. So there's some photos of Sid that have never been seen from Nick's archive, you know, came to us over that time span. And so in a way, you know, it absolutely changed, because, you know, I just followed, you know, wherever it went.
I noticed that, I forget the precise running time, you'll probably know, it's like 90 minutes or thereabouts, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it's about so, 94 with credits.
Yeah. Yeah, goodness knows what was left on the cutting room floor, because a whole load of material there. One of these interviews I could quite happily carry on for the next hour or so. But Roddy, thank you very much for spending some time with us this morning. And Have You Got It Yet? The story of Sid Barrett at the Picture House tomorrow night. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Julian. Happy to be there.
Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover.
Cambridge 105 Radio.